Window is papered over. It's that way. She pointed again, back the way Hogan had come. The vacant store was a classic unit, built in an old-fashioned style, with a floor-to-ceiling display window that curved around inward to meet the front door maybe 12 feet back from the sidewalk, at the end of what amounted to a viewing arcade, with mosaic tile on the floor. The door itself was glass in a frame, papered over. Reacher guessed the lock would be simple, like an old-fashioned household item. Twist the stubby lever, pull, and you were good to go. No key required. A key might be in the wrong pants pocket at the critical moment. And keys were slow. Gregory didn't want slow. He would be running, probably for his life. He wanted twist, pull, go. Is there an alarm? Hogan asked. He's a paranoid guy. He would want to know if someone was messing around back here. Reacher nodded. I'm sure he would, he said. But in the end, I think he acted realistic. Alarms go wrong. He didn't want to risk it beeping when he was out of the office, because Danilo might be there to hear it. In which case, questions would be asked for sure. The secret wouldn't last for long. So I think no alarm. But I'm sure it was a tough decision. Okay, then. Ready? A tight nod from Hogan. A determined nod from Abby. Reacher took out his ATM card. The best way past such a household item. He fiddled it into the crack and curved and curled it around until it jammed against the tongue of the lock. He yanked the door back toward the hinge, and some combination of sudden pressures told the crude mechanism the key had been turned, so the lock sprang back obediently. Reacher pushed the door and stepped inside. Chapter 45. The store had been renovated, but never occupied. It was still full of faint construction smells. Wallboard, spackle, paint. The paper on the window gave a soft, cloudy light. The place was just an empty white space, a huge bare cube, not fitted out in any way. Reacher knew nothing about the retail trade. From what he saw, he assumed the merchant was responsible for bringing in what was needed. Counters, registers, shelves, and racks. The back wall had a single door in it, properly cased with millwork, painted white, with a big brass lever handle. Not a secret door. Behind it was a short, dark hallway. Restroom to the left, office to the right. At the end of the hallway was another door, properly cased with millwork, painted white, with a big brass handle. Not secret. Behind it was another raw space, full width, maybe 20 feet deep. The left side was for storing stock, maybe. The right side was mechanical. There was a forced air furnace and a water heater and an air conditioning unit. The air shared the same ductwork as the heat. The ducts were still new and bright. The joins were taped with duct tape. What it was for, originally. There were water pipes and gas pipes coming up out of the concrete floor. There was an HVAC unit in the rear wall. Reacher had seen similar items in hotel rooms. Tall, narrow, all-in-one units. There were electrical panels standing open in the gloom. None of the breakers were labeled. There were no more doors. Abby said nothing. Reacher turned and looked back. Everything else was right. A straight shot out through the hallway, onward through the retail space. Twist, pull, go, and out to the street. Fast, unimpeded. Nothing in the way. All good. Except no more doors. He's paranoid, Hogan said. Even though he never rented the unit, he knew he could still get people coming in here from time to time. City inspectors, pest control, maybe an emergency plumber if there's a leak. He didn't want guys like that seeing a door and wondering what was behind it. They might have taken a look. Professional curiosity. Therefore, the door is disguised somehow. Maybe it's not even a door at all. Maybe it's just a bust-out panel of wallboard. No studs behind it. He tapped his way along the wall. The sound didn't change. Halfway between hollow and solid, everywhere. Wait, Reacher said. We've got a forced air furnace and an air conditioner feeding the same network of ducts, presumably controlled by some kind of a complicated thermostat on a wall somewhere. a brand new installation, still bright and shiny. So, Hogan said, why did they need a separate HVAC unit in the wall? If they wanted more heat or air back here, they could have put a couple extra vents in the ceiling. It would have cost them a dollar. They gathered in front of the unit. They looked at it, like a sculpture in a gallery. It was about head height to Abby. The bottom two-thirds was a plain metal panel attached by turnbuckle screws. Then came two rotary controls, one for heat off cool, the other for temperature, cold to warm, illustrated by a circular swipe that shaded from blue to red. Above the controls was a grill where the air came out, either warmed or cooled as instructed. Reacher hooked his fingertips in the grill and pulled. The whole panel came away as one. It snicked off magnetic closures and clattered to the floor. Behind it was a long straight corridor running away into darkness. There were no arrows on the wall, no emergency lighting like on an airplane. Abby lit up her phone, and its dim glow showed them the view maybe 10 feet ahead and 10 feet behind. The corridor was about 3 feet wide, newly and crisply built. It smelled the same as the vacant store, wallboard, spackle, paint. It ran straight for a spell, and then it turned 90 degrees right, and then 90 degrees left, as if picking its way around and between other people's rooms, their restrooms and their offices and their storerooms, in places a mysterious yard narrower than they should have been. Reacher pictured Gregory with the detailed plans, stealing a foot here and a foot there, sketching out false walls, piecing it all together. A labyrinthine route, but crisp and clear and coherent all the same. Couldn't trip, couldn't stumble, couldn't get lost. Reacher pictured a flashlight clipped to the wall at the entrance. Gregory grabbing it and hustling, crashing from corner to corner, bursting through the HVAC panel, running out through the vacant store. They walked on, slowly. The twists and turns made it hard to keep track of overall distance. Reacher remembered the block as a whole as square and pretty large by Old Town standards. Maybe 400 feet on a side. The taxi office and the conference room and the offices behind it would account for maybe 100 feet, maybe 150, depending how spacious, which gave them a net 250 feet to travel, which could have been a real-world 500 or more because of all the dogleg turns. Should take about 6 minutes, Reacher thought, at their slow and cautious pace. It took 5.5. They made one last turn, and then up ahead in the glow of Abby's phone, they saw the end of the corridor. The whole end wall was a sheet of heavy steel, side to side and floor to ceiling. Cut into it was a hatch about the size of the HVAC panel at the other end of the route, a hunched-down step-over proposition, like a submarine. On the right side there were heavy hinges welded to the steel. The metal was discolored from the heat. On the left was a heavy bolt. Currently drawn back. Gregory would push the hatch, step inside, slam the hatch behind him, and shoot the bolt. No pursuers. No key required. Faster. There was a flashlight clipped to the wall, right next to the bolt. They backed off two corners and spoke so low they could barely hear each other. Reacher whispered, I guess the real question is whether the hinges squeal. If yes, we do it fast. If no, we do it slow. Ready? A tight nod from Hogan, a determined nod from Abby. They retraced their steps, two turns, back to the steel hatch. Abby held her phone close to a hinge. It looked like a quality item. Forged steel, a glassy surface, but no trace of grease or oil. Unpredictable. The hatch had no handle. Not as such. Just two thick hoops for the bolt to lock into. Reacher hooked his finger through one of them. In his mind, he rehearsed what he would do next, either fast or slow. The hatch would be hidden on the inside by some kind of camouflage. Nothing too fancy. Nothing that would have involved visible workers. Nothing that would have changed the room's appearance. Nothing that Danilo would have noticed on his return. Probably an existing piece of furniture. As tall as Abby. Probably a bookcase. He would have to open the hatch and move it aside, either fast or slow. It turned out fast. Reacher eased the hatch open, and inside the first inch of travel, both hinges let out a piercing squeal. So he flung it open the rest of the way, and the glow of Abby's phone showed him the rough lumber back of a piece of heavy wooden furniture. He shoved it hard, and it fell forward and toppled over and crashed down. Completely unstable. A bookcase for sure. He scrambled out over it, into the room. Gregory had been sitting at his desk, in his green leather chair, running important things through his mind. Then he heard the hinges squeal behind him, and he spun his chair halfway around, just in time for the bookcase to fall on him. It was made of Baltic oak, all solid, no veneer. It was loaded with books and trophies and photos in frames. First, the front edge of a shelf broke his shoulder, and then an imperceptible millisecond later, the next shelf up cracked his skull, and then the full bulk of the thing crushed him down, tipping his chair, driving the side of his head against the edge of the desktop, but driving the rest of him onward to the floor, so that his neck bent grotesquely and snapped like a twig, killing him instantly. Reacher's extra weight as he clambered out over the felled furniture did him no further damage at all. Reacher saw the back of the bookcase ahead of him, tilted up like a ramp. It had fallen against a desk. He scrambled over it and saw a double door standing open, and an outer office beyond it, with a guy rising up out of a chair behind a desk, all kinds of shock and surprise on his face. This was Danilo, Reacher assumed. There was a door from the outer office to the corridor beyond. It was open, too. Coming through it were the sounds of scraping chairs and feet hitting linoleum floors. The loud screech and the loud crash had gotten folks' attention. Reacher had a Glock in his right hand and a Glock in his left. With his right, he was covering Danilo. With his left, he was covering the door. Hogan arrived behind him. Then Abby. She said, "Gregory is dead under the bookcase." Reacher said, "How?" "It fell on him. He was at his desk. The bookcase was behind him. I think it broke his neck. I pushed it on him." "I guess, technically." Reacher paused a beat. "He was a lucky man," he said. Then he nodded at Danilo and said to Hogan, "Place this guy under arrest. Keep him safe and unharmed. He and I need to have an important discussion." "About what?" "It's what we say in the army when we're going to beat someone to death." "Got it." Then time unspooled in a way that afterward Reacher thought was partly inevitable, even preordained, partly driven by culture, partly by peer pressure, by blind obedience, by hopeless lack of alternatives. Hard to comprehend. But it helped him understand the pile of bodies in the doorway in back of the lumberyard. They kept on coming. First, a solid guy, taking in the scene, going for his gun. Reacher let him get it out, allowed him to make his intent crystal clear. Then he shot him center mass, a single round. Then a second guy barreled in, pumped up with some kind of ludicrous, "I can do better" bravado. But he couldn't. Reacher dropped him, and he fell right on top of the first guy, which is how the pile started. It deterred no one. They kept on adding to it. One after the other. "We'll have all the same people ahead of us, except in reverse order." Hogan was absolutely right. First came the senior figures from the offices, then the smart muscle from inside the building, then finally the dumb muscle from out on the street corners. All of them driven, all of them relentless, all of them doomed. At first, Reacher thought of their sacrifice in medieval terms. But then he revised his estimate backward, all the way to the dawn of time, 100,000 generations, to the pure, insane grip of the tribe, and the absolute terror of being without it. It had kept them alive then, but not now. Eventually, there were no more footsteps. Reacher gave it another minute, just to be sure. The sound of his endless firing died away to angry, hissing silence. Then he turned to face Danilo. Chapter 46. Danilo was a small man by Reacher's standards, maybe 5'10", and wiry rather than heavy. Hogan had stripped him of his suit coat and emptied his shoulder holster. As a result, he looked naked and vulnerable, already defeated. Hogan had him standing next to the desk inside the inner office. The desk was a massive thing made of toffee-colored wood. The fallen bookcase was propped on it. It was huge. It must have weighed a ton. Books and ornaments had spilled out all over the place. From his new angle, Reacher could see Gregory on the floor. He was folded into a Z-shape, kind of compressed. Otherwise a healthy individual. Tall, hard, and solid. But dead. Pity. Reacher hooked his left forefinger under the knot of Danilo's tie and maneuvered him out into clear space. He turned him around and squared him up, shoulders back, chin out. He stood back. He said, "Tell me about your porn sites on the internet."
"Our what?" Danilo said.
Reacher slapped him, open-handed, but a colossal blow all the same. It knocked Danilo right off his feet. He did half of a sideways somersault and landed crumpled where the wall met the floor. "Get up," Reacher said. Danilo got up, slow and shaky, hands and knees first, palming his way up the wall. "Try again," Reacher said.
"There is sideline," Danilo said.
"Where are they?" Danilo hesitated. Reacher hit him again, the other side, open-handed, even harder than before. Danilo went down again, cartwheeling sideways, banging his head on the other wall. "Get up," Reacher said again. Danilo got up again, slow and shaky, hands and knees, hauling himself up the wall. "Where are they?" Reacher asked again.
"Nowhere," Danilo said. "Everywhere. It's the internet. There are bits and pieces on servers all over the planet."
"Controlled from where?" Danilo watched Reacher's right hand. He had figured out the sequence. Not difficult. Right, left, right. He didn't want to answer, but he was going to. He said the word. Not a hive or a burrow, but a nest way up high. Then he clamped his lips. Now he was between a rock and a hard place. He couldn't reveal the location. It was their biggest and best kept secret. Instead, he continued to stare at Reacher's right hand. Reacher said, "We already know where it is. You got nothing left to trade." Danilo didn't answer. Then a cell phone rang, distant and muffled, from the far doorway, in a pocket, somewhere in the pile of corpses. It pealed 6 times and stopped. Then another rang, equally distant, equally muffled. Then 2 more. The sound of the mothership not answering. Danilo said,
"I'm sorry."
"For what?" Reacher said.
"Things I did."
"But you did them. Can't change that." Danilo didn't answer. Abby said, "Yes." Hogan said, "Yes." Reacher shot Danilo in the forehead with the H&K P7 Hogan had taken from him. German police issue, identical to all the others. Maybe even sequential serial numbers. A bulk order from some bent German copper. Danilo went down, with what was left of his head in his own office, and the rest of him in Gregory's. Reacher looked left and right. "We'll be taking them out from the top to the bottom. Much more efficient." Job done. They were laid out like a corporate chart. Gregory, Danilo, the heap of senior deputies. Cell phones ringing everywhere. They left the same way they arrived, through the emergency exit corridor. They walked through the vacant store. Twist, pull, go, back to the street. The guys from the corners were still where they had fallen. No one would dream of calling the cops about dead bodies near a black town car on a back street on the west side of the city. Such a thing was obviously someone else's private business. "Where next?" Abby asked. "You okay?" Reacher asked back.
"Doing well. Where next?"
Reacher glanced at the downtown skyline, 6 towers, 3 office buildings, 3 hotels. He said, I should go say goodbye to the Sheviks. I might not get another chance. Why not? The lumber yard won't burn forever. Sooner or later, the cops will be back west of center. No more grand a week. They'll be mad at somebody. Questions will be asked. Always better not to be around for a thing like that.
You're going to leave?
Come with me. She didn't answer. He said, call Van Tresca and tell him to meet us. They left the Lincoln where it was. Insurance, of sorts. Like a road sign. Not, don't walk, but don't ask. The sun was out. No clouds in the sky. Middle of the afternoon. They strolled back the way they had driven. They rode up to the Sheviks' room. Maria looked at them through the peephole and let them in. Barton and Van Tresca were already there. Van Tresca pointed out the window, at the left hand of 2 office towers west of center. It was a plain rectangular structure about 20 stories tall, faced with glass that reflected the sky. Above the top floor's windows was a bland and anodyne name. Could have been an insurance company. Could have been a laxative medicine. You sure? Reacher asked. The only new lease in the right time frame. The top 3 floors. A corporation no one ever heard of. All kinds of weird shit going up in the elevator. Good work. Thank Barton. He knows a saxophone player with a day job in the Department of Buildings. Apparently Van Tresca had called room service on arrival, because a waiter showed up with a cart full of things to eat and drink. Finger sandwiches, cupcakes, a plate of cookies still warm from the microwave oven, plus water and soda and iced tea and hot tea, and best of all, hot coffee, in a tall chromium flask that flashed in the sun. They ate and drank together. Van Tresca said he had already sent a biohazard cleanup crew to the Sheviks house, and a drywall guy, and a painter. He said they could go home in the morning, if they wanted. They said they did, very much. They said thank you for fixing the holes. Then they looked at Reacher, a question in their eyes. Close of business today, he said. Watch out for a wire transfer. Aaron hesitated a second, politely, and asked, how big? I'm pretty much a round figures type of guy. If it's too much, give the rest away. To people in the same situation. Maybe some to those lawyers. Julian Harvey Wood, Gino Vettoretto, and Isaac Mahe Byford. They're doing good work, for guys with so many names. Then he got out the envelope from the pawn shop. The wedding bands, the small solitaires, the watch with the broken crystal. He gave it to Maria. He said, they went out of business. Then they left. Reacher, Abby, Barton, Hogan, Van Tresca, riding down in the elevator together, stepping out to the street. Half a block short of the office tower's street-level lobby was a single wide coffee shop with tables in back. They went in and crowded knee to knee, 5 people at a foretop. Van Tresca and Barton ran through what they knew. The building had been completed 3 years previously. It had 20 floors. It had a total of 40 suites. So far, it was a commercial failure. The local economy was uncertain. The unknown corporation had gotten a great deal on 18, 19, and 20. The only other tenants were a dentist down on 3 and a commercial real estate broker on 2. The rest was empty. Reacher asked Hogan, what would the Marine Corps do? Most likely evacuate the broker and the dentist and then set the building on fire. Either the high floor targets would make it down the emergency stairs, or they would get burned up where they were. Either way, a win-win for not much effort. Reacher asked Van Tresca, what would the armored divisions do? Standard urban doctrine is shoot out the ground floor walls so the building falls directly in on itself. You need to keep the streets clear of rubble if you can. Anything still moving a minute later, you hit it with the machine gun. Okay, Reacher said. Van Tresca asked, what would the MPs do? No doubt something subtle and ingenious, given our comparative lack of resources. Like what? Reacher thought hard for a minute, and then he told them. Chapter 47. 5 minutes later, Barton left the coffee shop for an imaginary dental appointment. Reacher and the others stayed where they were. It was a convenient base, close by. No doubt the counterman was a West Side informant, but there was no one left to inform. Reacher saw him make a couple of calls. Apparently, they weren't answered. The guy stared at his phone, puzzled. Then Hogan and Ventresca left for an imaginary discussion about commercial real estate. Reacher and Abby stayed at the table. Theirs were the only faces on Ukrainian phones. They figured they better not start the party too early. The counterman tried a third call. It wasn't answered. Abby said, "I guess this means we can go back to my place tonight." "No reason why not," Reacher said. "Unless you leave before tonight." "Depends what happens. All five of us might be running." "Suppose we aren't." "Then we'll go back to your place tonight."
"For how long?"
He said, "What would be your answer to that question?" She said, "I guess not forever." "That's my answer, too. Except my forever horizon is closer than most. Full disclosure."
"How close?"
He looked out the window, at the street, at the brick, at the afternoon shadows. He said, "I already feel like I've been here forever."
"So you'll leave anyway. Come with me."
"What's wrong with sticking around?" "What's wrong with not?"
"Nothing," she said. "I'm not complaining. I just want to know."
"Know what?"
"How long we've got. So I can make the most of it."
"You don't want to come with me?"
"Seems to me I have a choice of two things. Either a good memory with a beginning and an end, or a long slow fizzle, where I get tired of motels and hitchhiking and walking. I choose the memory of a successful experiment, much rarer than you think. We did good, Reacher."
"We're not at the end yet. Don't count your chickens."
"You worried?"
"Professionally concerned."
"Maria told me what you said to her. One day you're going to lose.
Just not today." I was trying to cheer her up. That was all. She was really feeling it. I would have said anything.
"I think you meant it."
"It's something they teach you in the army. The only thing under your direct control is how hard you work. In other words, if you really, really buckle down today and you get the intelligence, the planning, and the execution each 100% exactly correct, then you are bound to prevail."
"Sounds empowering."
"It's the army. What they really mean is, if you fail today, it's completely your own fault."
"We've done okay so far."
"But now the game has changed. Now we're fighting Moscow. Not just a bunch of pimps and thieves. Same actual people. But a better system guaranteed. Better planning. The pick of the litter. Fewer weaknesses. Fewer mistakes."
"Sounds bad."
"I'm guessing about 50-50. Win or lose.
Which is okay.
I like the simplicity."
"How do we do it?"
"Intelligence, planning, execution. First, we think like them, which isn't difficult. We studied them endlessly. Ventresca could tell you. They're smart people, organized, bureaucratic, cautious, careful, scientific, and painfully rational."
"So how can we win?"
"We can exploit the rational part of their natures," Reacher said. "We can do something a rational person would never even consider. Something completely unhinged." Then the first intelligence report came back. Barton stepped in and nodded a greeting and headed to the counter. He got coffee and walked over to the table. He sat down. But before he could say anything, the second report arrived. Hogan and Ventresca stepping in together. They came straight to the table.
They jostled for space and squeezed themselves in. 5 people at a foretop. Barton said, "The front wall of the lobby is all glass. You go in a revolving door. The back wall of the lobby is the front face of the building's core. There are 5 openings in it. A fire stair door, 3 elevators, and another fire stair door. Between you and them are security turnstiles and a security desk. Behind the security desk is what looks to me like a regular civilian rent-a-cop."
"Is that all?" Reacher said.
"I guess it's all that the building provides," Barton said. "But there are also 4 men in suits and ties. I guess provided by someone else. 2 of them were waiting just inside the revolving door. They asked my business. I said the dentist. They stepped aside and waved me forward toward the security desk, where the rent-a-cop asked my business all over again."
Reacher looked at Hogan and Van Tresca. "Same for you?" he asked.
"Exactly the same," Van Tresca said.
"It's a pretty good upstream screen. Then it gets even better. The other 2 guys are on the other side of the security turnstiles, by the elevators, which have been upgraded with a new control panel. Like you see in really tall buildings with thousands of people. You punch in the floor you want, and the screen tells you which car to go wait for. Then the car takes you where you said. There are no buttons inside. It's a very efficient system, but totally unnecessary for a building that small. Obviously there for a reason, which is the 2 guys won't let you punch in your floor yourself. They have to do it for you. They ask where you're going. You tell them. They press the buttons. They show you where to wait. Then you get in the elevator car, and you get out again when the doors open. No other option."
"Were there cameras in the lobby?"
"There's a little glass pip in the elevator panel. Almost certainly a fisheye lens, feeding straight upstairs."
Reacher nodded. He looked at Barton. He asked, "How was the dentist?"
"The 3rd floor was all small suites. All of them off a rectangular inner corridor that ran around the building core. The core was blank on 3 sides. I went up to 4 on the fire stairs, and it was the same. 5 had 2 larger suites in back. I couldn't get all the way around the core. I guess the blank face becomes a wall inside the suite."
Hogan said, "We ran up to 6 and started from there. The suites get bigger the higher you go. It's safe to assume 19 is a whole floor extravaganza. The elevators come up in the center. That's all the architect gave them. I'm sure they built the rest out exactly the way they wanted it."
"Starting with the cage," Reacher said.
"Guaranteed," Van Tresca said. "It's even simpler than we thought, because the building is tall, but not large. There is only 1 service core, with only 5 structural openings per floor, and they're all in a line. 1 cage could control them all. No need to weld anything shut. You could build a cage maybe 6 feet deep, maybe 8 feet tall, starting from just before the 1st fire door and running the whole width to just beyond the last. Every door opens into it, elevators and fire stairs alike. It would be like a long rectangular reception area, kind of shallow. You would have to wait there a minute, with armed men looking in at you through the wire, with more armed men on the gate to let you out. The mechanism might be electronic. Maybe there are 2 gates, like an airlock.
Floors and ceilings.
Concrete slab. No significant penetration. All the big diameter risers run up and down inside the core with the elevator shafts."
"Okay," Reacher said.
"Okay what?"
"Cautious, careful, scientific, and rational. That's what I told Abby.
Plus paranoid. You can bet they did the exact same things on 18 and 20. Which would make their buffer zones virtually impregnable."
Reacher nodded. "It's a thing of beauty," he said. "There's no way in."
"So how do we do it?"
"When the going gets tough, the tough go shopping."
"Where?"
"Hardware store." The nearest place was a national franchise, full of earnest slogans about doing things together and doing them now. Moscow would have approved. It was large enough to have what they wanted, but not large enough to offer a choice. Which hustled things along?
A linoleum knife was a linoleum knife. A cross-cut saw was a cross-cut saw. And so on and so forth. They bought a tool bag each. The store's name was on them, but they looked professional. The hospitalized Gazim Hoxha paid for everything via his potato-shaped wallet. They packed their bags carefully and slung them over their shoulders. Then they set out walking, back the way they had come, but this time not stopping at the coffee shop. This time heading straight on, the extra half block, to the office tower's street-level door. Chapter 48. Like Barton had reported, the front wall of the lobby was all glass, which meant the guys at the door saw them early, from maybe 30 feet away, which at their current rate of speed was several seconds still to go, all of which Reacher hoped would be filled by spikes of mild confusion, just enough to keep them guessing. Five people hustling were automatically suspect. Five people with tool bags, maybe not. Maybe plumbers on an urgent call-out to fix a leak. Or electricians. Except one was a woman. But that was okay, wasn't it? This was America. Except one had a face like the guy from Kiev. Gregory had texted a picture before he went quiet. Was the guy from Kiev a plumber? Just tiny stop-start, this-way-that-way flickers in the brain, enough to slow them down, enough to make their eventual reactions a fatal beat late. Because by then the revolving door was already spinning fast, disgorging first Reacher, then Hogan, then Van Tresca, then Barton, then Abby, all of them bringing guns up out of their tool bags, fanning out, Hogan and Van Tresca sprinting ahead, Abby sprinting after them, Reacher and Barton jamming up the guys at the door, guns under chins, pushing them backward. Hogan and Van Tresca and Abby hurdling the turnstiles, the guys slamming into the men in the suits, taking them down. Abby skidding to a halt in front of the elevator control panel, ready for her close-up. She stood still for a second. The light from the street was behind her. Petite and gamin, neat and slender, hip-shot, dressed all in black, holding a Glock 17. Performance art. A figure from a nightmare. Then she leaned forward and sprayed the little glass pip with a hiss of rattle-can paint. Flat black, from the hardware store. By which time Barton was already starting the same thing on the front wall of glass, but with white, for an effect like the vacant retail unit. The four men in suits were huddled together, with Reacher and Van Tresca pointing guns at them, and Hogan preparing to make them secure, with long cable ties, from the hardware store. The rent-a-cop at the security desk was looking on nervously. Reacher called out to him, "Do you work for these people?" The guy called back, "No, sir, I most definitely do not." "But nevertheless, you hold a position. You have responsibilities. At least toward the owner of this building. Perhaps you swore an oath. If we let you go, you're pretty much obliged to call the cops. You look like a man of principle. Therefore, best if we tie you up too. Maybe even a blindfold. We'll leave you on the floor behind your desk. You can deny everything afterward. Would that be agreeable?" "Probably best," the guy said. "First, come lock the door for us." The guy stood up. Which was when the plan went wrong, when the so far easy execution ran off the rails. Although afterward, in periods of honest reflection, Reacher found he thought of it as the moment when the plan went right. He wanted it. Secretly he had hoped for it. Hence the cross-cut saws. Something completely unhinged. Hogan bent down to zip-tie the first guy's ankle. Either the guy straight-up panicked, or he got hit by some kind of last-chance desperation, or both. Or maybe he was hoping to start up some kind of insurrection. But for whatever reason, suddenly he bolted forward, straight at Van Tresca, wild emotions in his eyes, wild energy in his actions. He more or less ran himself onto the muzzle of Van Tresca's gun. Van Tresca did everything right. In the corner of his eye, he saw that Hogan was rolling away, like a good Marine should, to avoid the charging guy's feet, to avoid friendly fire. He saw that there was no one behind, no danger from a through and through. He knew they were in a concrete building. No danger of a through-the-wall random calamity. Not even much noise, given the proximity shot. The guy's chest cavity would act as a giant suppressor. Van Tresca pulled the trigger. There was no insurrection. The other three guys stayed where they were. The rent-a-cop said, "Oh, shit." "We'll get to you in a minute," Reacher said. "First, lock the door." On the 19th floor, someone noticed the lobby screen was dark. No one knew how long it had been that way. At first, it was taken to be a technical fault. But then someone else felt the blankness was not completely uniform, not 0 volts across the board. Something else. So they rolled back the hard drive and saw a young woman spraying an aerosol can, after first posing with a gun, after first rushing in through the revolving door with 4 other figures, all in different street clothes, but all equipped with identical mission-specific satchels. A black ops unit, led by a woman. This was America. Of course, the first thing they did was call down to the lobby, just in case. 4 separate cell numbers. 4 no answers. As feared. Because as expected. The same everywhere, the last 2 hours. They even tried the building's rent-a-cop. They had the number. The landline. On his silly desk. No answer. Completely isolated. No information at all. Now not even from the lobby. No idea what was happening. Cut off from the world. Nothing on the news. Nothing on the rumor sites. No weird deployments. No press secretaries waiting on standby. They tried all the numbers again. No answer. Then the elevator rumbled. The center shaft. The car arrived with a hiss of air. The doors opened, smooth and swish. On the back wall of the car, someone had spray-painted the Ukrainian word for loser. Under its dripping Cyrillic was one of their own guys, from the lobby, black suit and tie, sitting splayed out, arms and legs at an angle. He had been shot in the chest. His head had been cut off. His head was propped up between his legs. The doors closed, smooth and swish. The elevator rumbled. The car went back down. Completely isolated. No contact. Everyone without a specific task to attend to gathered in the elevator lobby, outside the cage, close to the wire, staring in, positioning themselves as if laying bets. Some opposite the center elevator, as if expecting it to return with its gruesome tableau. Others chose the first elevator, or the third. Some outliers watched the fire stairs. There were all kinds of theories. They waited. Nothing happened. People changed places at the wire, as if the delay was subtly altering the odds, as if it was making one scenario slightly more likely than another, or less unlikely. They waited. They tried 3 sample numbers, 1 more time. First Gregory's, then Danilo's. Then the watch leaders down in the lobby, with no real hope, with no answer. They waited. They changed position at the wire. They listened. The elevator rumbled. This time, the left-hand shaft. The car arrived, with a hiss of air. The doors opened, smooth and swish. On the floor of the car was another of their guys, from the lobby, black suit and tie. Lying on his side, hogtied, with his wrists and his ankles zipped together behind him, gagged with a black rag wound around his head, squirming, thrashing, appealing with his eyes, desperately, mouthing the gag as if screaming, "Please come get me, please come get me," and then nodding urgently, as if beckoning, as if to say, "Yes, yes, it's safe, please come get me," and then flopping his body desperately, as if trying to reach the threshold. The doors closed on him, smooth and swish. The car went down again.
At first, no one spoke.
Then someone said, "We should have saved him."
Someone else said, "How could we?
We should have been quicker. Somehow he escaped down there. We should have helped him. There was no time."
The guy who had spoken first looked all around, first from where he was to the gate, and then at the keypad, and then from the gate to the left-hand elevator on the inside. He timed it out in his mind. The doors open, the doors close. No, not enough time. Especially with a what-the-hell split second to freeze at the very beginning. Just not possible.
"Pity," he said. "He escaped, and we sent him back down."
Escaped how?
Maybe they trussed him up ready to cut his head off, but somehow he rolled away into the elevator and he came up here, and they wanted us to save him. He was 6 feet away.
No one spoke. The guy said,
"Listen."
The elevator rumbled. The left-hand shaft again, coming back up. The guy said,
"Open the gate."
"Not allowed."
"We got to get there this time. Open the gate."
No one spoke. The elevator rumbled. Someone else said,
"Yeah, open the damn gate. We can't send the poor bastard down again a second time."
Completely isolated. No orders. No leadership. A third voice said,
"Open the gate."
The guy at the gate punched in the numbers. After its programmed delay, the lock clicked open. The panel swung back. 4 guys stepped through. Guns out. Cautious. Up on their toes. The others stayed out, watching through the wire. The elevator rumbled. The car arrived with a hiss of air. The doors opened, smooth and swish. Same guy on the floor, black suit and tie, hogtied the same, gagged the same, squirming, thrashing, pleading with his eyes, nodding desperately, beckoning, flopping around. The 4 guys inside rushed forward, ready to lend a hand. But it wasn't the same guy. It was Van Tresca. Average build. He fit the suit. He wasn't hogtied. He was holding his hands behind his back, hiding 2 Glock 17s, which he brought out and fired 4 times, fast, aimed, deliberate. At which point the right-hand elevator opened up, and Reacher stepped out, with Hogan and Barton and Abby. 4 handguns. Hogan fired first. Must-win targets are any opponents within command and control distance of the gate, had been Reacher's briefing. 3 rounds did the job. Meanwhile, Reacher himself was clearing the fence, firing into the backs or half-backs of all those standing mesmerized by the sight of Van Tresca shooting their buddies from the floor of his elevator car. Barton was covering one end of the lobby, and Abby was covering the other. It was over fast. Hard not to be. As an exercise, it was easy. The attackers had surprise on their side, and after that commanded a dense concentration of fire from the narrow corner of a rectangular battle space. The only friendly within the field of fire was inside a bulletproof concrete shaft all his own, and from there was able to provide effective enfilade fire, all of which made the victory routine. The prize was the gate. It was still standing open. Some kind of complicated lock, not currently engaged. Maybe electronic. There was a keypad on the post. Reacher stepped through the gate, into the secret space beyond, followed by Hogan and Abby and Barton, with Van Tresca bringing up the rear, in the borrowed suit, dusting it off after his showmanship on the elevator floor.
Chapter 49. The back part of Reacher's brain was clattering away on some kind of a complicated computation, which involved dividing the total square footage of the 19th floor by the total number of KIA in its elevator lobby, which surely meant, after realistically allowing for officer-class accommodations for the important nerds and densely packed barracks-class accommodations for the enlisted ranks, that the herd was already substantially thinned. Had to be. There couldn't be many more guys available. Not unless they had been sleeping 3 to a bed or stacked on the floor. Simple math. The front part of Reacher's brain said, never mind. If I fail today, it's my own fault. He pressed up face first against a corridor wall and peered one-eyed around a corner. He saw another corridor. Same width. Doors left and right. Offices, maybe. Or bedrooms. Bathrooms across the hall. Or storerooms. Or laboratories. Or nerve centers. Or hives or nests or burrows. He moved on. Hogan followed. Then Abby. Then Barton and Ventresca. The first room on the left was some kind of a security post. Empty. Abandoned. A desk and a chair. Unoccupied. Two flat-screen televisions on the desk. One labeled Lobby, which was blacked out with paint, and one marked 19th Floor, which showed the view from a camera evidently mounted high on the wall opposite the elevator back. The angle was downward. The view was of a lot of dead bodies on the floor. More than a dozen. "Told you so," said the back part of his brain. He moved on. The first room on the right was also empty. It had a floor-to-ceiling window facing north. The city lay spread out below. In the room were four armchairs, a buzzing refrigerator, and a coffee machine on a table. A ready room. Or a crew room. Convenient. Close to the elevators. They moved on. They saw nothing. No people. No kind of technical equipment. Reacher had no real idea what it would look like. He was hung up on Abby's original description. Like in the movies. The mad scientist in his lab, full of lit-up machines and crackling energy. To him, a server was someone playing tennis or bringing a drink. Ventresca figured the whole installation might be nothing more than half a dozen laptops. Cloud-based, he called it. Hogan predicted a low room full of white laminate and chilly air. They crept onward. Saw nothing. "Wait," Reacher whispered. "We're wasting time. This is not business as usual. I think they've gone straight to the end game. I think the Headless Horseman brought every spare guy to the elevator cage. Only people working that exact minute stayed behind and survived. So now, they're hunkered down. It's Custer's last stand for them." "How many?" Hogan asked. "I don't care," Reacher said, "as long as Trulenko is one of them." Abby said, "If it's six laptops, it could be just a couple of guys. Plus guards," Reacher said. "As many as Moscow decreed should be in the room at all times, or at least those of them who maintained discipline, which might be a different number." Ventresca said, "Moscow would decree an entire guards regiment if it could." "I guess it depends how big the room is." Hogan said, "If it's six laptops, it could be a broom closet. Could be anywhere. Could be a secret door in back of a broom closet."
"No. Trulenko wants windows," Abby said. "Especially these windows. I bet he loves the view. I bet he loves standing there, looking out through the glass, lording it over the earthlings below. Even though he's actually a failure and practically a prisoner, I bet it makes him feel better."
"Wait," Reacher said again. He looked at Barton.
"You said on the fourth floor you could walk all around the building's core. It was blank on three sides. But on the fifth floor, you couldn't get all the way around, because of bigger suites in back, inside of which the long blank face of the core would become a wall inside a room."
"Yes,"
Barton said. "It's a pretty good wall to have," Reacher said. "Isn't it? It's as close as you can get to all the risers and the services running up and down behind the elevators." He looked at Ventresca.
"Back in the day, if you had to lay wired communications, how long would you want your wires to be?"
"As short as humanly possible," Ventresca said.
"Because?"
"Wires are vulnerable." Reacher nodded. "Not mechanically robust," he said. "Plus, that wall gets first call on the power and the water, and whatever the generator kicks out in an emergency. I bet that's the wall Moscow wanted." He said the word. A hive, or a nest, or a burrow, full of something that hummed, or buzzed, or thrashed around. He said, "They built it out from the back of the elevator core, all the way to the windows opposite, because Moscow wanted the wall, and guys like Trulenko wanted the view. What else could they do?" Ventresca said, "That's a big room." Reacher nodded.
Same size and shape as the lobby downstairs, he said. Same space exactly, except flipped around 180.
Big enough for a guards regiment.
Couple of rifle companies at the most.
Maybe nobody, Abby said, because of human nature. These guys are from Ukraine. Moscow is like a patronizing big brother. They'll make up their own rules. What does it matter if they're actually in the room? They have the cage. Everywhere is equally safe. Maybe Trulenko doesn't even want them in the room anyway, watching over his shoulder. That's human nature, too.
Situation C, Hogan said. Got to be someone.
Maybe not anymore, Abby said. They've been cut off 2 hours. I think the instinct would be to come out and fight on the barricades, at the wire. I think it would be irresistible, because of human nature. You wouldn't want to hide in a corridor, waiting for the inevitable.
Reacher said, this is what the pointy heads would call a wide range of baseline assumptions, anywhere from no one in the room to a guards regiment. What's your guess? I don't care, he said again, as long as Trulenko is one of them.
Seriously?
It's a ratio. Depends how many nerds they have. There could be dozens packed in there, rows and rows of them.
No, Ventresca said. This is the custom shop. This is the skunk works. The drones are elsewhere, in the cloud.
Or in their mom's basement, Hogan said.
Wherever, Ventresca said. Trulenko is an artist. It's him and a small handful of others. Maybe one or two, maximum.
Okay, Reacher said. Then either four guards in the room or one. Probably the close protection part of Situation C calls for a crew of four within arm's length contact at all times. Worst case, they're maintaining discipline on that. Best case, Abby is right and Trulenko doesn't like it. In which case, maybe they came to a private arrangement. I saw it happen time to time. Typically, the watch leader sits in the corner like part of the furniture. Maybe they become friends. You could sell the movie rights. Meanwhile, the other three from the crew go hang out someplace else, with whoever else Situation C has called for. Which is it? One or four? The back of his brain said one. Out loud, he said four. They peered around the next corner, and Barton pointed out the corresponding door that, down on five, had led to the big suites in back. Chapter 50. The short end of the elevator corps was at Reacher's left shoulder. The door was dead ahead. Therefore, outside of the width of the corps. Therefore, not part of the room itself. An exterior hallway, or an entrance lobby. Reacher pushed the door, with spread fingertips, slowly, carefully. An anteroom. Empty. Three chairs, dragged in, casually arranged. The back part of Reacher's brain said, this is where they hung out. The other three from the crew. Then they heard the commotion at the elevators. They ran over there. Now they're dead. The front part of his brain saw another door, ahead on the left, in the side wall, perfectly in line with the short end of the corps. Therefore, the door into the room. It was an impressive piece of hardware, almost certainly soundproof, like in movies Reacher had seen, about recording studios or radio stations. It hinged outward, big and heavy, slow to move, a security system all its own. To open it, a person would need to plant a hand on the wall and curl about 200 pounds with the other, all the time dragging his own center mass into a vulnerable gap he was making invitingly wider and wider by his own voluntary efforts. Nowhere to be found in the field manual. Because one guy or four inside, they would be guarding the point of entry pretty closely. Guns out and ready. Textbook. Their last stand. Reacher went through it in sign language. He tapped his chest. I will. He mimed wrenching open the door, a sudden jerk, maximum strength. He tapped Abby on the shoulder, mimed kneeling and aiming at the future gap. He tapped Ventresca on the shoulder and mimed crouching and aiming over Abby's head. Then Hogan over Ventresca's head.
He put Barton at 90 degrees, just in case the door opened to reveal a different trajectory. The others got in position, kneeling, crouching, standing. Reacher grasped the door, both hands. He braced his feet. He took a breath. He nodded. One, two, three. He wrenched the door. Abby fired. Vantreska fired. Hogan fired. All at once. One round each. Then nothing, except the clatter of a dropped gun and the fleshy thump of a falling body and hissing, ringing silence. Reacher looked around the door. One guy, the watch leader, no longer sitting in the corner like part of the furniture, no longer making friends, recently standing alert, watching the door, probably with his gun in a two-handed grip. But the wait was long. Time passed slow. Attention wandered. Focus drifted. Arms got tired. The muzzle drooped down. Beyond the dead guy was a room that looked pretty much the way Hogan had called it. White laminate and chilly air. Huge. The size of the street lobby. Windows floor to ceiling and wall to wall. Benches and racks. Someone's idea of a technical facility. Maybe last year. Or last week. Since updated with an overlay of drooping wires and unexplained boxes. The heart of the operation seemed to be even skinnier than Vantreska had predicted. 5 laptops, not 6. They were lined up side by side on a bench. Behind the bench were 2 guys. Reacher recognized Trulenko immediately, from Abby's description, from the pictures in the paper. A pretty small guy, young, but his hair was going. He wore eyeglasses. He won't be breaking rocks in a quarry. He was wearing chino pants and a t-shirt. Next to him was a guy maybe 5 years younger, taller but reedy, stooped shoulders already from typing too much. Trulenko said something in Ukrainian. Vantreska said he just told his pal not to tell us anything. Not a good start, Reacher said. Barton and Hogan backed the 2 guys away from their keyboards. Reacher looked out the window, at the earthlings below. He said, "Suppose you were writing a program. Here's what you need to know about our side of the equation. We're not affiliated with any government or any agency. This is purely private enterprise. We have 2 very specific and very personal requirements. Apart from them, we don't give a shit. We have no dog in any other fight. Do exactly what we tell you, and we'll leave, and you'll never see us again." No response. Reacher asked, "What does your impeccable software logic tell you will happen next?" No response. "Correct," Reacher said. "We're not affiliated with any government or any agency, which means we obey no rules. We just fought through a whole army of the best tough guys you personally ever saw. We just penetrated your innermost layer, which means we're tougher than you. Therefore, most likely nastier, too. Your impeccable logic tells you you're going to suffer if you don't do what we want. Before we came here, we visited the hardware store. You can play it out like a game of chess. Obviously, we'll start with the kid. A victory for your side is very hard to imagine. Inevitably, in the end, you'll do what we tell you. Logic dictates you should skip straight there. Save us all a lot of trouble." Trulenko said, "I'm not one of these guys." "But you work for them." "I ran low on options. But hey, I'm not committed. Maybe we can work something out. I do 2 things, and you let me walk out of here. Is that what we're saying?" "But don't get smart," Reacher said. "We know enough to know what you're doing. We bought a glass cutter at the hardware store. We could cut a circle out of the window. We could throw you through. Like mailing a letter." "What 2 things?" "The first is the pornography. All your different websites."
"That's what you're here for."
"2 very specific and very personal requirements," Reacher said again. "The first is the porn."
"It's a sideline, man."
"Erase it. Delete it. Whatever the word is."
"All of it?"
"Forever."
Okay, Trulenko said.
Wow. I guess I could do that.
Mind me asking, is this some kind of moral crusade?
What part of our process so far strikes you as moral?
Trulenko didn't answer. Reacher walked over and stood next to him. Barton and Hogan stood back. Trulenko stepped up to the bench. Reacher said, tell us what you got here.
Trulenko pointed. He said, the first two are social media, a constant stream of made-up stories, which also go to the bullshit websites, all of which are dumb enough to believe every word. They also go to the TV networks, only some of which are dumb enough. The third is identity theft. The fourth is miscellaneous.
What's the fifth?
The money.
Where's the porn?
Number four, Trulenko said. Miscellaneous. It's a sideline.
Go for it, Reacher said. Task number one. The others crowded around. In truth, their knowledge was rudimentary, from the consumer end only. But Trulenko didn't know that. Their scrutiny seemed to keep him on the straight and narrow. He typed long streams of code. He answered yes, yes, and yes to all kinds of are you sure questions. Text marched across the screen. Eventually, it stopped. Trulenko stood back.
It's gone, he said. The content is 100% securely deleted, and the domain names are back for sale.
No one objected. Okay, Reacher said. Now get on five. Show us the money.
Which money?
All the liquid assets.
So that's what you're here for.
Makes the world go round. Trulenko took a step to his right. Wait, Reacher said. Stay on four for a moment. Show us your own bank account.
Not relevant, man. I got nothing to do with these guys. They're entirely separate from me. I came here from San Francisco.
Show us anyway. Apply the impeccable logic. Trulenko was quiet a beat. Then he said,
my business was a limited liability corporation.
You mean everyone else took a bath, except you.
My personal assets were protected. That's the point of the corporate structure. It encourages entrepreneurship. It encourages risk-taking. That's where the glory is.
Show us your personal assets, Reacher said.
Trulenko paused another beat. Then he arrived at the inevitable conclusion. He seemed to be a pretty quick and decisive thinker, possibly influenced by his long association with computers. He stepped up again and typed and clicked. Soon the screen redrew. A soothing color. A list of numbers. Maxime Trulenko. Checking account. Balance $4 million. Maria Shevik had pawned her mother's rings for $80.
Leave that screen open, Reacher said. Shuffle along to number five. Show us what Gregory had.
Trulenko shuffled along. He typed and clicked. The screen redrew. He said, this is the only liquid account. Petty cash, in and out.
How much is in there at the moment?
Trulenko looked. He said, right now, $29 million.
Add your money to it, Reacher said. Send Gregory a wire.
What?
You heard. Empty out your bank account and move the money to Gregory's.
Trulenko didn't answer, didn't move. He was thinking, fast, like he could. Within seconds, he was at the acceptance stage.
Reacher could see it in his face. Better to walk out broke than not walk out at all. Could be worse. He was quickly at home with the notion, like one broken leg was better than both. He stepped back to four and typed and clicked. Yes, yes, and yes to the are you sure questions. Then he stepped back. The balance on four pinged down to zero. On five, it bumped up to $33 million.
Now type in these numbers, Reacher said. He recited Aaron Shevik's bank account details from memory, learned days before, ahead of the trip to the bar.
The man with the prison tattoo thinks you're Aaron Shevik. You have to go get our money for us.
$18,900 on that occasion. I'm pretty much a round figures guy. Trulenko read the numbers back. All good. Reacher said, now wire the money. How much? All of it. What? You heard. Empty out Gregory's bank account and move the money to the account I just gave you. Trulenko paused again. The point of no return. His personal assets were about to disappear out from under his control. But one broken leg was better than both. He typed and clicked. Yes, yes, and yes. He stood back. The balance on the screen pinged down to zero. $33 million set out on a journey. Reacher looked at the others. He said, you guys go on ahead. I'll catch you by the elevator. They all nodded. He thought only Abby knew why. They filed out, past the dead guy. Ventresca was last. He looked back. Then he went. Reacher stepped up next to Trulenko. He said, something I need to tell you. Trulenko said, what? The part about you walking out of here. What about it? It was fake news. Reacher shot him in the forehead and left him where he fell. Chapter 51. They spent the night at Abby's place, in the living room, with its muted colors, and its worn and comfortable furniture, and its cozy textures. In the kitchen, with its coffee machine, and its white china mugs, and its tiny table in the window. But mostly in the bedroom. First, they took long hot showers, obviously and overtly symbolic, but also warming and comforting, and necessary, and practical. They got out smelling clean and fresh and fragrant. Innocent. Like flowers. So far, Reacher hadn't said either way. Not for sure. But Abby seemed to take it as their last night together. She seemed to have no regrets. I guess not forever. She was bold. She was funny. She was lithe and experimental. And artful. Between times, she snuggled. But she sought no security. Instead, from time to time, she stretched out like a cat. She smiled, wide and unabashed. A great feeling. You're alive, and they ain't. In the morning, they were woken early by a phone call from the Sheviks. Abby put it on speaker. First, Maria came on and said the scan showed total success. The improvement was remarkable. Their little girl was getting better. The doctors were dancing a jig. Then Aaron came on and said he was shocked by the wire, nearly had a heart attack. Reacher told him what he had told him before. Give the rest away. To people in the same condition. Some to the lawyers. After buying back the house from the bank. Maybe Meg could move in while she recovered. Maybe they could get a new TV. Maybe a new car also. Or an old car. Something interesting. Something fun. Maybe a Jaguar. A satisfying machine. Reacher said he had it on good authority. Then he left. He tracked around the downtown blocks, and he crossed Center Street, and he kept a polite distance from the high-rent districts. Half a mile later, he arrived at the bus depot. He went in the door. He checked the board and bought a ticket. He still had $5,000 in his pocket, from the pawn shop. He was glad of it. He liked the heft and the deadness. It would pay his way. 2 or 3 weeks, at least. Maybe more, if he was careful. 10 days later, he was drifting north with the summer. By chance, on a bus, he found a copy of the Washington Post. There was a long feature story inside. It said organized crime had been cleaned out of a certain notorious city. A long-standing problem, finally solved. 2 rival gangs, both gone. No more extortion. Drugs gone. Vice gone. No more random violence. No more reign of terror. The new police commissioner was taking all the credit. He called himself a new broom, with new ideas and new energy. There was talk he might run for office one day. Mayor, possibly. Or maybe even governor. No reason why not. So far, his record was sparkling. This is Scott Brick. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Blue Moon, a Jack Reacher novel by Lee Child. This program was directed by Christina Rooney, executive producer Kelly Gilday. Text copyright 2019 by Lee Child. Production copyright 2019, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.